Hello, everybody. Welcome to our weekly group coaching call here for March 29th, 2018. Great to be here with you guys. We got a couple of, we got a website review today, and so we'll be getting to that, but let's go ahead and get started with pre-submitted questions, and then we'll also open it up for live Q&A and discussion. So just as a reminder, I'm here for you. So use me, don't abuse me, but use me. Star 2 on your telephone keypad will raise your hand if you're on a phone or on a web call, and I will see your hand raise, and I'll unmute you, and we can have a chat. If you're on the call page, and the way to get there is going into the training portal, finding today's call, clicking on that, and then you'll be there on that page. Many of you actually log in that way, even if you use the phone. You can also type in a question, and I'll see it over here. I'll read it, and I'll address it. So got a couple of different options, and we'll also get to that that website review from Susie. So let's see. We got a question that Mike pre-submitted a couple of days ago. he says, "Hi, Ed. I'm looking at a container of yogurt as I type this. Would you mind sharing some insights about the packaging market, like your potato chips? I don't know much about it, but digital potato chips don't seem to be imminent. So I'm just wondering how viable of a world the packaging industry is." Yeah, so there's consumer packaged good companies, and from Procter & Gamble all the way down to the small mom-and-pop food and beverage companies have to write copy for the packaging, right, for the outside of the box, container, jar, or whatever, and somebody has to write that. Now, in many cases, somebody internally is writing it. Sometimes the marketing agency, ad agency they're working with will do that, and many times they do hire freelancers. So in terms of the viability of it, there's a ton out there. As you can imagine, right, if pretty much anything you pick up has some copy, and somebody has to write it, there's an art form to it. And I didn't realize that until I had one of those first clients. For you who don't know the story, that was one of my first, actually pretty much my first paying client, was a potato chip company. They just needed some package copy for their back of some new bags, some new products they were launching, and they paid me $200 each to do it. And I thought it'd be super easy. It took me a while because, first of all, I'd never done it before, and second, it's when you have very little space, every word has to count. So it really forces you to think through that and just make sure that it's conveying the message you want to convey quickly and with just a handful of words. So you have to create this image and emotion. So in terms of how viable it is, yeah, it's very viable. But I wouldn't get distracted. Here's the thing, guys. You probably already realize this is a process we've walked through, right? Please be careful not to get distracted by shiny objects. If you're going after a certain target market, stay focused on that target market. Don't send out a couple of prospecting emails and then, let me also dabble here and let me also try this other thing. It's very easy to do that. I see it all the time. You will delete your efforts. You will not get traction anywhere, and then you'll get discouraged and quit. So my advice for anyone, and this I'm not putting you on the spot, Mike, but as you start looking at other options, or maybe people tell you about other markets they're in, or you start finding about other different opportunities within the world of copywriting, please, please, please stay focused, stay disciplined, keep your head down. You made the decisions you made for a very specific reason, and if an opportunity comes your way, absolutely, take a look at it, see if it makes sense. And again, I've told you guys several times, at the beginning, say yes to everything. That's really more of a philosophy than real advice. But yeah, say yes to everything. But not that doesn't mean go out and start exploring all these different types of copywriting or different types of target market. Okay. So again, star two. If you have a question or need some feedback on anything, and then I'm also, by the way, one other thing I want to do. In fact, let me go there now. Is I want to check back in with you guys, follow up on the accountability thread. So Alice, if you're in today, definitely want to ask you about what you had committed to researching and finding 10 more pension companies and to send them warm emails. So want to know if you're able to get some of those out this week or all 10. Susie said she was going to submit her website for review, which she did. We're going to take a look at that and then send out 10 prospecting emails. So please let me know how you did. And again, just star two. Dylan said he was fell a little behind. He's going to catch up by notifying 15 of his immediate friends and family about his new copywriting business. And then he was going to send out 10 warm emails to a list he formulated this past weekend. So if, I don't know if you're on, Dylan. Would love to know how that's going. Marissa just posted about an hour ago that she sent out her first prospecting email, which is fantastic. And they responded. And it's didn't have the right contact, but they went ahead and gave her the information of whom to contact. So she's excited to get the ball rolling. So, Marissa, I'd love to hear next steps. Okay, so you got that going. What are you going to work on? What do you want to commit to over the next week? And, okay, so Alice just responded. She's fallen behind this week. She had a migraine, two-day migraine. Ooh, sorry about that. She's going to work on finding 10 new pension companies this weekend and sending warm emails to them early next week. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's great, Alice. So keep it up, guys. I will keep posting a thread every week to encourage everyone to commit to an action. Guys, it doesn't really matter what the action is. It doesn't have to be anything big. You know, even if it's one small thing, if you know that putting yourself out there is going to help motivate you to get it done, I think it's worth it. So no point in trying to be a hero. Just no. This is a judgment-free zone here. Just let us know, and let me know how I can help you. All right, so star two, if you have a question. I don't see any hands raised, so I will go to – hold on. Just check on this other screen. Yeah, let's go to the website review thread. Let's take a look at Susie's website. Okay, and if you guys want to follow along, let me make sure I have it right. Okay, SusanUnderwood.com. SusanUnderwood.com. Okay. Hey, beautiful picture here. I love the just the kind of the splash image. Welcome to Susan Underwood Copywriting, freelance copy and content writer for the education industry, creating copy that educates, connects, and compels. Okay. So a couple of thoughts. Visually, your homepage, love it. This is very clean, very professional, very modern. This looks like you paid a designer a lot of money to create, okay? So the look and feel is wonderful. In terms of the headline itself, I think it's okay. I would give it a C+, B-. Welcome to Susan Underwood Copywriting. I would avoid the welcome for now and instead just focus more on I like the one you have underneath, freelance copy and content writer for the education industry. So some variation of that I think would be better, because if you're going to hit them with something, a welcome is just not the strongest thing you can do. Again, if you think of your headline as drawing them in, you know, am I in the right place? That's the question I'm asking myself is when I'm a visitor. Then I want to know that that I am. And if not, that's great. That's fine too, because I want to be able to leave quickly if it's not the right place. So if I'm in the education industry and I'm considering hiring a copywriter, it's more important that you tell me that you can possibly help me in that headline than just welcoming me, okay? So I think some version of the freelance copy and content writer for the education industry, and even that I think you can beef up a little bit, and you'll see some of the examples in lesson two, would be better. Even if you had Susan Underwood copywriting at the top, and then also in that same size, freelance copywriter and content writer for the education industry, even that would be a good temporary replacement. I think you can do better than that, but that would be even better. All right, so then freelance, let's talk about freelance copy and content writer for the education industry. Freelance is, the convention is one word, not two words, so freelance, one word. And I would say copywriter, and because freelance copy, it just threw me off. So freelance copywriter and content writer for the education industry. Also, I would consider, even though I've said it a few times, removing freelance. Freelance is not going to really add anything to it, and you're really focusing on what you do for them. So the fact that your status doesn't really matter, and the assumption is already that you are solo. So if you're marketing yourself, you're solo. So, yeah, copywriter and content writer for the education industry, but again, I think you can probably improve that a little bit. Creating copy that educates, connects, and compels. Okay. Let me look at your homepage copy and see if maybe we can come back to that headline. All right. Oh, this looks really sharp. I really like this, Susie. All right. Helping companies in the education industry stay connected with their customers. If you work with the education industry, then you know their daily challenges, such as budget issues, school safety, time constraints, ever-changing curricula, teachers, cybersecurity. That's all before 9 a.m., yeah, pretty much, right? The intro, if you work with the education industry, so we already established that they do, so there's no need to kind of elaborate on that as much as you did. I would just say educators are dealing with a constant stream of challenges, including budget issues, school safety, et cetera. So just go ahead and make the statement, not an if-then. Okay, whether you're selling a number two pencil, an e-learning program, or a modular classroom, educators need to know you can understand their world. That's where I step in. If you're working, I am your target audience. Oh, cool. Now I write marketing content and copy for companies in the education industry. This is really good, Susan. So this, everything from whether you're selling a number two pencil, that whole section, I wouldn't change a word. Fantastic. That really, really connects with, if I'm putting myself in their shoes, that it has all the four elements, what you do, for whom, what makes you different, and why that difference matters. You really emphasize all four of those points. There's nothing that's off balance. Fantastic. The one suggestion I have is when you're talking about an industry, the convention, this is, my proofreader has just harped on me for years on this, the convention is to not capitalize the industry. So education, lowercase e. And same thing with I in industry. So education industry. I don't remember the reasoning, but that's the convention today. Ready to talk? Contact me. What they say about me. Yeah, really, really nice. Love it. Okay, so let's come back to the headline. I hate to keep harping on it, but again, it's so important. The headline is so critical. Coming back to it again, forget about the welcome. that doesn't really do much. I would come up with a headline here that talks about the fact that you are part of their audience. Like you are, let me see, how did you phrase it? I am your target audience. What can you do? How can you phrase that in a way that would work as a headline? That element, that ingredient should be in your headline. That would be my suggestion. You know, if when you're marketing to the these are not actual words, but when you're marketing to the education industry, it helps to have someone writing your copy who's already part of your audience and has been for the past 25 years. Something like that. Work with that, or at least consider that. Work with that message, and I think you'll come up with something that really grabs me, because that's different. Now you're not just selling, well, if you need a copywriter, here. Now it's, if you're going to do this and you're going to talk to these people, it really helps if you are working with someone who's already part of that industry and has been for the past 25 years. Okay, so let's look at why me. Experience is the best teacher. There's no substitute for someone who understands the burdens and pressures your customers face. I get it because I've been there. Teaching several different grade levels. Yeah. I like it. One suggestion, I love the copy under Why Me, the body copy, and I love the quotes. One suggestion would be to end your copy with a call to action. Take a look at some of, see how I can help you, or take a look at some of my writing samples. Get a feel for my writing style. I don't know, something along those lines. So don't just come to that abrupt ending. Again, work with them, help them go deeper into the site. All right, I'm going to services. What I offer, my services fall into two different areas, content marketing and copywriting. That's another one where you don't need to capitalize content marketing and copywriting. You could leave those all lowercase. Both areas allow me to help you connect with your company, with your customer, and develop a relationship based on trust. Okay, I like the way you organize this. Content marketing. And any other content that will help in three ways. Create a buyer, establish authority, collect leads. Oh, I like it. So, you know, kind of your core services and then any other content that will help in three different ways. That's really cool. It's very minor, but that last bullet, I would, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily have that as a bullet. This just kind of ties it all together. But based on the way this is laid out, you probably don't have a choice. So don't worry. If you can't take it off the bulleted list and use it as kind of a bookend to this page, then leave it there. Copywriting projects include sales letters. Very nice. I like the way you organize the projects. I'd love to chat with you regarding your next project, see if we could be a good fit. Excellent. Call to action there at the end. Let's look at your samples. Check out my work. Check out should be two words. Otherwise, it's a noun instead of a verb. Okay. Email, ads, content. Article, ads, okay, content article, there you go. I mean, look, you're doing exactly what I've been advising, which is just use what you've got. Don't worry. If you got it, just use it. This is a short-term problem. As you start getting some clients, you'll be able to replace some of these with copy samples for actual clients. What you're really leveraging right now, what you want to emphasize is your experience, what you bring to the table other than the great writing. And you're doing just that. Let's look at FAQs, frequently asked questions. Okay.
consulting services. Yeah. Nothing to really add to FAQs. And you know, as you start getting questions from prospects, you'll get a better idea of what you might need to add or change or edit on that page. So this is a good start. Let's chat. Here's your contact information. Okay, one suggestion, when you have your hours here, so this is just something to consider. I would advise against posting weekend hours there. Clients don't expect you to work weekends. They don't expect you to work overnight. And if they do, they're probably not the best client for you. And again, right now you're at the phase where you should say yes to everybody and to everything because you're trying to get some momentum started. But if you want to leave it there now, that's fine. Just know that as you start growing, I advise against using availability and responsiveness and service level of this kind as your differentiator. Your differentiators are something else. Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 6, that's plenty. Somebody wants to work on a weekend or talk to you on a weekend, you can make exceptions. You can coordinate that offline. But to advertise, you're also available pretty much all day Friday. And then, by the way, that's not enough. I can be available evenings and even on Sundays by appointment. That's too much, and you are creating the wrong expectation. And what that's inviting are the clients that need it yesterday, and those clients are also happen to be the ones who don't want to pay very well either. So, again, it's okay to leave it there now, but just a little bit of advice as you grow to I would consider removing that. So, great job. Susan, I hope you understand these changes are not big, these suggested edits. Really mostly about the headline, the first part of your homepage, and just little things here and there. And this is really, really sharp and professional. In fact, one of the most beautiful sites I've seen for a copywriter. So I'd be curious to know if you did it on your own, if you had some help, because this is impressive. Okay. So let's see, star two, guys, don't be shy. I'm here. I won't be here later today or tomorrow. Feel free to raise your hand, tell me what's going on, catch me up on what you're doing. All right, we got a brave soul. Joy, how are you?
Hello, how are you, Ed?
Hey, good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. So, yeah, I do have a quick question, hopefully.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? So I have the page up for service. You know, I'm a technical writer, and I'm my niche is service desk, writing for ITIL service desk operations. And there's a service desk company. So I want to write to them because they outsource their work. They would provide a service desk to, let's say, a company that didn't have its own service desk, whether that be remote or in-house. And I want to ask them if they ever thought about adding a technical writer to their services and if I could, you know, eventually be a service. How does that sound?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So now, do you know if these companies typically don't have one, don't have a writer, or what have you found?
I've found that they typically don't, and I've found that, and this is quite typical also, that they don't even think about hiring a writer, a technical writer, for their for their articles. And my last position that I was working, everyone was so excited to have, you know, that burden taken off of them as far as, you know, the actual texts were concerned. And I think that's why I chose it as my niche, and it works out. And I want to ask them, going back to my question, yes, I want to ask them if they even consider having that kind of service offered as part of their deal with, you know, someone else who they've contracted with.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. And I wonder, how would you be able to make it non-threatening? So, in other words, if you were to ask me, right, you were just having a conversation, have you ever thought about hiring a writer and offering that service? Like, that feels like a big commitment, right? You're just asking me, have you ever thought about, you know, buying a car? So how about, you know, how can you rephrase it so that it feels like more, hey, have you ever thought about testing out this idea? Or is this, right, you know what I'm saying? Like, how can you make it more of a pilot and less of a, you know, big commitment?
Yes, exactly. I didn't want to come in too threatening. I think maybe cost would be a consideration as to why they don't hire a professional to write these articles. I just know the value that a technical writer could add to these articles. You know, they could be more concise. They'll be more well written. Because again, I worked on a help desk, and not everyone is interested in writing. You know, due to time or due to the fact that they aren't good at it. And so I really do want to come in as a person who's asking, you're right about this, as testing or a pilot project. And I think I just made up something, TW as a service, like tech writing as a service.
Yeah. Well, I think you're onto something there. What if you asked a question, but then you soften the blow by adding something to the effect of, you know, if you would consider maybe trying this as a small pilot, you know, on a project or with someone, you know, maybe we should talk. Something along those lines. You know what I'm saying? So have you ever considered this? You know, if the idea sounds appealing, if it's something you've thought about before, would it make sense for, you know how I like to end it, would it make sense to connect? Would it make sense to connect to see if it would be worth trying it as a small pilot?
Right.
Something along those lines. You have to choose the right words, but.
I think that's pretty good. And in fact, you know, what I'm thinking of is contacting more of these service desk companies, and let's see how this first one goes. But that could open up the prospect of more than one client at a time if they really would like to try it as a pilot. So I could possibly get some samples, and you know, again, if that works out, they could start offering. But I kind of just came across this idea just looking up emails for prospecting.
This is the cool thing about you being an insider, right? You already understand where the potential needs would be and where you could help. So you're not offering, you're not throwing an idea out there that's just kind of out in left field. You know this is an idea with legs.
Right.
I like it. I like it. And you know what? At the end of the day, here's the thing. What have you got to lose, right? Let's put this out there. Let's send out 20, 30 warm emails with something to that effect, and let's just see where it goes. Again, you're just trying to open up some dialogue. If you can start some dialogue with some of these prospects, that's all. Your email's not going to get you hired. Your email's just you're just trying to get a response. You're trying to start a conversation. And if you can do that, let's see where it goes. And you know what? Don't be surprised if this is you think this might be it. But what it does is it's a great opener for some with some prospects. And that mm-hmm. leads to, you know what, yes, I think we would consider that, but let me ask you, do you also do this? Because we need,
right.
you know, help with it. And then, you know, you went in thinking, I'm going to open with this, I'm going to lead with this, but then the conversation turns to something else.
Right. I am always open to the conversation going someplace else. That's pretty much what technical writing is. You kind of think you're in one place and it goes someplace else. So,
yeah,
you're right about that. So what about this? I don't know if anybody else has come across this, but when you can't find like a personal email address to a manager, or, you know, again, in my case, it would be a manager of a service desk or even someone over the director of a service desk. On their websites, they don't have any email addresses, but they have that form that you fill out if you want a consultation or anything like that. There's a section for messaging. Do you think that counts as a place to put a warm email if you could fit in the amount of characters that that little section requires? Because it is an email address. It's just not showing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I strongly advise against using the contact form or sending an email to a generic email address like sales@info@abccompany.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would go work just a little harder to try to find their email address. And
mm-hmm.
are you able to at least find a name somewhere? Have you tried looking some of them up?
Well, there's phone numbers there, and I did like a reverse lookup. So I think that was going to be close to some things, and then it was time for your call. So I haven't looked again, but yeah, you're right. I should dig deeper into finding direct contact for these people.
Yes. So in session 5, I have
mm-hmm.
an extra video lesson where I show you the process that I use, and then I show you some alternate steps if that one is not working with some people. And it's basically a combination of LinkedIn and Google. But if that doesn't
mm-hmm.
turn up, then I have another method, and then I have a PDF there with 24 different tools that help you
mm-hmm.
find email addresses and verify those email addresses.
Yes, I did read that section about the finding the email addresses. I just been that's kind of a lot for me, but I mean, I'm talking myself out of it. You're right about that. I mean, I've had to overcome some doubting that I would get a prospect. So I am just happy that I come up with a bright idea. To help me get through. I've had really good feedback, though, from my personal network, and that was surprising to me also. So I'm getting over my reluctance and my shyness from just doing what you ask us to do.
Well, listen, I am glad that you, first of all, are pushing yourself, because I know it's hard. I get it. We're all dealing with our own insecurities, right? And, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm working on my own every week, believe me. I just have a different mm-hmm. set. Everyone's got a different set of insecurities and doubts and fears.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing big happens on the side we typically are in. So there's a great quote that says, everything you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear. And it's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about being fearless. It's about fearing less. And the way you fear less is by stretching the boundaries of your comfort zone every week, little by little. Nothing crazy. I'm not asking anyone to, you know, bungee jump. I'm asking you to just do a little bit every day, every week. Believe me. And in fact, you know this from your own personal life, Joy, right? When you do that, you'll look back in a year and you'll be astonished how far you've come. Because these incremental daily and weekly pushes build on themselves and create compounding benefits. So
right.
just work with what you've got right now in terms of confidence, and just do it one bit at a time. And if you can send out one email, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and just tell yourself, what's the worst that could happen? I get no response. Then it starts feeling a little bit less threatening, you know, and
yeah.
just keep going. And just you'll see your comfort zone will increase.
Yep. Yeah, I'm feeling more comfortable, and I've sent out the one emails to network people in my network or other people, and they've all responded with, I'm happy to hear about your new venture, and I'll keep you in mind. And that, to me, is like, oh, good. Thank goodness they responded, you know, and they said they're happy
yes.
to hear about it. So it sounded really nice and warm, not like a sales pitch within my email. So I was really happy about that, and my confidence level is growing, so... Thank you for the advice. I needed that right on.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad to hear it.
Glad
to hear
it.
We'll keep on going.
I will. I'll go back to trying to find this person's name and number, not number, but email address, and I'm gonna get right on it. So thank you, Ed.
You're welcome, Joy.
Okay.
Good stuff. All right, let's see. I got Susan with her hand raised, and then Alice submitted a question. Susan, I'll get right to you. Let me answer Alice's question. She says, in trying to find more companies for warm emails, does LinkedIn or Google work best? So I find that Google works best in that regard, because think about it. The steps is basically, okay, let's find some companies. And once I find some that I think might be viable, let's find a contact name in their title. And then once I find that, let's find their contact information. So that's the hierarchy. So starting with LinkedIn could work, but I find that Google is often a better starting place because you're able to go in, you know, pension companies in California or software companies, construction software companies in North America, or you leave out the geography if you wanted to. And then I'll come across a bunch of different – usually when you search like that, what you end up with is not the actual companies, but compiled list of top 100, top 500, blah, 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 whatever, mostly rankings of some sort, or analyst reviews in the industry or target market that you're searching for. So I find that that tends to work a little better. However, LinkedIn, I do have to give them credit. Their search capabilities have gotten really, really good. And you can go into the advanced search area and plug in some of that information. But I find that for me, LinkedIn works better once I have some company names that I want to investigate further. And by that, I mean finding some contacts that I could – and some contact names that I could target within those companies that I'm searching for. Okay, so let's see. I got Susan, Rafiq, Gladys. All right, perfect. Let's start with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hi, Ed.
How are you?
How are you?
Doing well.
Can you hear me?
Congrats on your website. It looks beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I was appreciative of all that you had to critique on there for me. My speaker wasn't working properly, so I couldn't talk to you during the process. But so I had a question about if on the homepage that I had, where it had, you know, the big font, welcome to Susan Underwood Copywriting. I'm wondering if, should that be where I just say, you know, copywriter and content marketer for education industry? Like, do I even need to say Susan Underwood Copywriting at that point? Or, because my logo's up in the corner, so should I bump that down to the bottom and instead say something more like, you know, exactly what I do first, and then something like turn to a veteran educator or blah, 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 something like what you were saying. You know, would that be better to load that in there? Or
Yeah, so that's what I meant earlier, that that is prime real estate, and you're taking it up with a welcome message that doesn't really do anything.
Right.
So,
right.
And I don't mean this in a negative way, but nobody cares, you know, like,
oh,
welcome.
Right.
Nobody,
no, I'm so glad that you said that. Yeah. No.
So if I were to, you know, here you got prime real estate. This is Times Square, right? What would you hit them with? And then that's why I said, let me read your copy and let's come back to the headline, because then I found something. I said, oh, wait a minute. What about a headline? And this is not the actual copy, but what if you had a 25-year educator writing your copy and marketing content? Question mark.
Perfect.
Something
right.
like that.
Right.
Now that grabs me. It's not the typical welcome. That's just people gloss over that.
Right.
And you've made a statement, and then you've implied value and focus and how you can help me. Like, all those things are there. All the elements just appear there. So I would, and you're going to have to be careful because there's not a lot of room. I suspect that part of the theme doesn't give you a lot to work
right.
with.
Correct.
But, yeah.
Okay. That would help. And then if so let's say I say, you know, hey, what if you had a 25-year veteran educator? And so you're saying even if I say educator like that, I still go lowercase.
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right. Okay. It's kind of sad that an educator doesn't know that.
No, listen, I
yeah, that's embarrassing.
So here's a tip for you guys. I didn't know that either. It's just funny how you learn things just as you go. I launched a newsletter early in my copywriting career, just to kind of keep in touch with clients and prospects. And by the way, I'm a huge believer in having a newsletter eventually. You guys don't need to worry about that now. But I had a typo one time in one of them, and a prospect pointed it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happened again a couple of months later. Somebody
right.
else pointed it out. And I was so mortified because
right.
the idea is if you're sending us out and you're a writer, it should be error-free.
Right.
So it really messed with my head. And I was telling a friend of mine, she said, oh, my gosh, that's everybody, Ed. You need to use a proofreader. I said,
right.
What do you mean? Like, what do you find a proofreader? She referred me to her proofreader ever since, and this is about 2004, 2005. I've used a proofreader.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the unexpected benefits of doing that is not just the fact that my clients are in awe. It's like, Ed, you always submit error-free copy. It's always clean. It's awesome. So that was a huge benefit. But the other big benefit was the fact that my writing got better because, you know, you can be – eventually you're going to get it. Like somebody tells you something 25 times, eventually you're going to say, okay,
right.
you know what, I need to remember
right.
that. And many times that's how many times it takes for me to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
But those are two, three dozen things that I kept doing that they kept getting on my case about.
Right.
So that's how I know it, Susan. I before this, I had no idea.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, yeah.
In the titles, I found out the titles, you know, the vice president, Susan Underwood, vice president of marketing, your title in running text would not be capitalized. That's another thing I didn't know.
Yeah, that's
And the
really
only time it's capitalized if it's used as a title, period, like on a business card. Vice President of Marketing. But in running text, it's not. And I kept doing that, and they kept getting on my case. So things that you learn. So I guess lesson here is to work with a proofreader because it's not that expensive, and you'll learn a ton, and your clients will love you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think, you know, at this point, we're just trying to be conservative money-wise, so I didn't really think about it, but you've certainly talked about that before, and I think I'm going to have to really kind of pursue that more because it is terrible, especially if I'm going after education for there to be typos. And, yeah, there's just stuff that you overlook, and even if I had the other things right, I still would have missed something. So, like check out, you know, like, so, yeah. So that was
absolutely
crazy.
I mean, it's one of those things. I hear you, but I think when you when you hear what the costs are versus the risk, then it'll be
right.
a no-brainer. I don't
okay.
think – like if you took your whole site, put it in a Word document, and sent it in, I bet it wouldn't be more than $30, $40.
Oh, my goodness. Really? Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
wow.
that's what I'm talking about. It's a low cost and huge return. And I've made it a practice. I don't proofread, so with my newsletter and stuff these days, so I have somebody in-house, and
mm-hmm.
She'll proofread 90% of it. I send out emails on Sundays that I'm just writing those on my own.
Right.
And I don't run those through her because many times it's more of an impromptu thing, but I probably
mm-hmm.
should. But, yeah, it's not a huge cost. It really mm-hmm. isn't.
Well, then that's a no-brainer for sure. So I was also going to say that I used Fiverr. I found a guy, just a really great guy to work with on Fiverr, and he's the one who did the design work.
Oh, wow. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I was really pleased. I thought he did a great job, super easy to work with. And if anybody else is still sort of stuck, I'd be glad to give them his name and that kind of thing. He was super helpful.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Susan. Great job.
Thank you so much for your review. I really appreciate that. And I was going to update you. I had said that I would send out 10 emails, and I haven't quite done that yet, but it's Thursday, so I still have a couple of days. So.
Okay. All right.
So
I'll make sure to check in with you next week.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Oh, but, yeah, you won't be here next week.
That's right. I'm sorry. The following Tuesday. Yeah. Tuesday,
so I have even a couple extra days then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But I'll still check in with you in the forum, so don't worry. You can't
okay.
escape.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I confused you, but I'm on Facebook. It's my maiden name, Harmon. So Susie Harmon, but my name's Underwood. So.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
But Aquia Harbor says hello.
Ah, great! I haven't been there in forever.
You're not missing anything. It's okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Ed. I really appreciate your encouragement.
You're welcome, Susan. You take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Let's see. You got Rafiq and Gladys. Let's see. Start with Rafiq. You are on, my friend. How's it going?
Hey, Ed. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. So you're cranking over there. What's cooking? Catch us up.
Yeah, so I signed up with one tech startup that does virtual reality and augmented reality solutions for companies.
Uh-huh.
And I found this company through angel.co, which is basically a listing website for startups.
Uh-huh.
And so I reached out to them, and it's a pretty small company, but I've been talking to the founder, and we met, and we signed the paperwork, and essentially he's bringing me on board as on a retainer basis to do content marketing, and he also wants me to see if I can help him with media pitching. So I wanted to know if that's something you've done in the past, if clients have asked for this. Essentially, it's about, you know, trying to get blog pieces, get guest blog post opportunities for him so he can be perceived as a thought leader.
Gotcha.
So, any thoughts on that? Yeah.
I'm curious, when you found him on angel.co, were they posting for a position for a freelancer, or did you see them there and then you reached out with a warm email?
He was looking for an intern to help him with some content marketing writing. And I reached out to him and said, hey, listen, I know you're looking for an intern, but why don't you work with somebody who's got all the experience but is looking for remote part-time work? I can do all this additional stuff for you. I have a network of people that I can help you tap as well. So I went a bit beyond content marketing and pitching myself.
That's awesome. Good for you. And see, this is great because it's another example of so much of this process is creative, meaning instead of you passing on that one thinking, oh, they're looking for an intern, you know, let me look at the next one. Let's pass on them. You said, well, let me think about this. How can I present this idea in a way that might be appealing to them, which is exactly what you did. I love it.
Right. He hadn't thought about that angle too. So when I pitched it to him, he was like, oh, okay. Can you sort of write down and tell me what do you think will be your value add over somebody who's fresh out of college? And so I wrote down my thoughts for him.
Ah, there you go. Which is why it's so important, you know, this exercise that you guys have done, right, the why me stuff. It's important to not just, once you have it in web copy, forget about it. It's important to constantly read that stuff in practice, in role play with somebody, because you will be in a situation sometimes when you have to sell someone on your value. It's like they basically give you an opportunity. Well, tell me, why you? And if you're prepared,
yeah,
you know, there you go. You're in. But if you're not, you're going to stumble, and then that could actually kill the deal. So well done, man. Very well done.
Well, thank you.
All right, so media pitching is kind of it's kind of its own discipline in that how do I say this? It's kind of like the same thing as prospecting for clients. And a lot of the best practices still apply. So what do I mean by that? Well, these media companies, whether you're talking about blogs or in some cases podcasts or other online publications, they're actually being hit all the time. So unlike B2B clients are not getting hit all the time by copywriters and content writers. So they don't get that many pitches. But media companies get a ton of them. And so they're getting bombarded. Now, just like I've told you guys, most of the pitches they get are very generic because people are just naturally lazy and they're just trying to spray and pray. And they're trying to send pitches out and automate the broadcast of those pitches as much as possible, just trying to see who will raise their hand because they're desperate at the time. And that's kind of the philosophy that 90-something percent of public relations firms are using these days. So you can really stand out by taking the warm email approach where you actually took the time, it doesn't take that much effort or time, to pitch an idea and show that you did your homework. Saying, I know this about you. I have someone here who I think could really help your audience. And here's why. You know, here's a bit of information on them. Would it make sense to connect? So it's really the same approach. Okay, so that's the first tip I would give you. The second thing is the people who do really well with this, I didn't mean to bash PR firms a minute ago, but a lot of them are just lazy. But the ones who do a really good job have relationships, and that is the key to long-term success with pitching, right? So they focus, these PR firms and people who pitch articles and thought leaders, they already have relationships. And then when they get a client, they think about, okay, where would they be a good fit? And then they make calls and send out emails and tap their network to find opportunities, right? So it's more that relationship angle, not just the relevance and personalization, but the relationship as well. So does it mean they have to have relationships in order to succeed? No, not necessarily. The next best thing is just to keep your pitches very focused, relevant, and personalized and short, just like with warm emails. I think that's going to be your best bet. But just keep in mind, you know, it's tough. It's really tough, and what you're relying on is the fact that a lot of these media companies, they are thirsty for content, good, relevant content. So if you can show them that you've done your homework and that you can help them, you'll get attention. You'll be able to at least start a conversation. You know, but it's a tough gig.
Okay. Yeah, I think the way I told him was let's create a white paper or an ebook, and let's use that to as a wedge or as a you know beachhead to get some interest from others saying, okay, this you know person is a thought leader, he's shared his thoughts on you know a problem solution approach to how VR can be used in say real estate. And then that might be a good hook for them to say, oh, we'd like to invite the CEO of XYZ and share his thoughts on how VR can be applicable in this particular industry. So that's the way I'm thinking about it. And he's agreed to
that.
You know, that's the first collateral we're going to work on. Yeah.
I like that idea a lot. And I think it's smart and that's a good first step. You know, don't try to get too, for them, they shouldn't get too far ahead themselves.
Right, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Thank you.
You are welcome. Good luck. Hey, keep us posted on that. Sounds exciting.
Yep. Thanks. Will do.
All right. Let's see. We got Gladys. Hey, Gladys. How
Hi,
are Ed. You?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Doing great. A lot of good stuff on your end, right?
Yes. Well, before we get to that, I just wanted to congratulate Rafiq. I think it's great that he's gotten going there. And also Susan, her website was just beautiful. So
I know,
awesome.
Right?
Awesome. And and also to Susan, just because we're educators doesn't mean we know everything, so there's no need to be embarrassed.
There you go.
You know?
I'm glad you said it too, yeah.
Oh. So I have a question, and I know that, you know, your experience probably just doesn't apply across the board, but I'd like to hear your experience anyway. When do you stop saying yes to everybody? And let me kind of like, you know, just give you some of my thoughts on that. You know, at the very beginning, I never actually wanted to go back to the education market. I mean, I left it for a reason. I've just been there, done that, and I didn't really want to go back because it's not that interesting to me. So now my second client, I'm writing for somebody who's designed something innovative for the golf industry. And there's always something innovative coming out in the golf industry. Golfers are always paying big bucks for all kinds of gadgets and stuff. And I loved that industry because I spend half my life on the golf course. I mean, that's half my life. so this is awesome. I find it really interesting. Now, in my list of people that I have not yet emailed, I have people in all kinds of different things, doing all kinds of different things because I'm saying at the beginning to gain traction, I will just pitch to whoever is closest and, you know, are those golden nuggets so that I can gain traction. Now I'm looking at my list. I'm going, you know what? I really don't want to write for a nonprofit. Like, what if I emailed her and she says, great, why don't you work on this? I'm thinking, I really don't right now. But, I mean, I'm probably not at that stage when I can just start saying no to everybody. So when did you start, you know, kind of calling and saying, you know, this really isn't for me?
A great question. What will really help you, I think, is the factors you should consider in your decision rather than a formula, because there's no such formula.
Mm-hmm.
And here are some factors as I just think of them in no particular order. I don't have these written down anywhere. But one of them is obviously you start getting clients. So as you start getting clients, guess what happens? Your week starts filling up.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's production time. Now you got to get the work done. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one, because at first you're so hungry and you got all this availability that's not being used, and now it's, okay, well, now three-quarters of my week, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes your marketing. That's fine. But now you got less time, so you know your capacity is getting up there. You're tapping out. The other is financial. So whether you need some cash to pay bills, or you have a goal to sock away a certain number, and then once you reach that level, then you know you can take the next step. So in my case, I was doing this part time as I had my day job, and one of my goals was to have a year's worth of living expenses and savings. Mm-hmm. That was a very specific number. Mm-hmm. And I was saying yes to everything because, number one, I had the capacity, and number two, the faster I got to that number, the faster I could quit my day job. Mm-hmm. Another factor would be something you kind of mentioned earlier. It's how you feel about it. You know, if you look at your next name on the list and you go, I really don't. As long as the other factors are okay, then skip that person. Mm-hmm. You know, in my case, I would say that, but then I would look at my other factors and go, yeah, but I'm only 10% of the way to that savings goal. Mm-hmm. Then suck it up, Ed. You're a big boy. You know, you're just gonna have to suck it up.
Right.
So I think those are really the biggest things. It's going to be your own decision, but it needs to be driven by something, and it can't just all be how you feel.
Right.
So there have to be those other factors as well. Because, you know, the other thing, too, is just make sure it's not driven by fear.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be fear, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But do your best and not let fear drive all of it. Just like you shouldn't let emotion drive all of it in terms of, like, you don't feel like doing it or you don't feel like writing about X topic. So
mm-hmm.
there needs to be a balance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And you know, now that, I mean, this is, I never even thought of writing for golf. I mean, I just thought this is something that I do for fun. I never knew that, I mean, I just never connected those dots. But now that I have, you know, started in this industry, I think I am going to redo my cold email list and see whether I could reach out to some of these companies that are making these innovative products, because I would love to write for them. I mean, that's and now I have, you know, I'm beginning to have samples.
Golf samples.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here's what's the risk and what's the potential reward. I always look at both. The risk is that you have some, but maybe now you got to rework your whole website copy so it's aligned with your message, with your pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe many of these companies just, they got innovative stuff, but they don't have the budget because they think their stuff will sell itself.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get the whole marketing. So that's a risk.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, look at your other goals and your financial requirements and so forth and weigh it against that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you take a stepped approach and you don't pivot yet, mm-hmm. not quite yet. You keep leveraging those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you got a better footing, then you go ahead and pivot, you know.
Right. I think I'm also going to ask this client, you know, whether she has other contacts and go from there as well, so that I don't have to change my website and change, you know, my positioning just yet. Just see if I can, you know, kind of use her as one of my connectors.
Yeah. Because that will trump the need to have a website that's perfect,
right,
perfectly suited for the golf industry, right?
Right.
And of course, if there's more opportunities too with each of these clients, make sure you go as far as you can.
Yeah, sure.
Each one.
That makes sense. Okay.
Part of that is just, you know, thinking through. That's why I love thinking about my clients' businesses, because I'm like, you'll think of ideas to bring
mm-hmm.
to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, yeah, I never thought about that. Could you help us with that? Yeah.
Right. Right.
I sure can.
Well, I'm seeing possibilities here, because right now I'm writing what she calls an expert opinion research report, and basically is a white paper. And she's going to use that sort of as, you know, all of the information there, because she's going to get interviewed later on this year as the expert in this niche here. But she says that whatever information is in there, she's going to use that, you know, that content for other pieces. So I'm already hearing, oh, she needs other pieces written. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, this is exciting, but that's what I've been doing this week. I've kind of just been keeping my head down and working.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. I think you're thinking about it the right way. And this is, no matter what, Gladys, I know you're going to be successful. So just keep doing what you're doing, no matter whether it's in golf or, you know, something else or something related. You know, you could start off in golf. I've seen this before. And then that kind of veers into a slightly different direction that you still love and you hadn't really considered. That's kind of in the realm of maybe some other sport or something related to golf.
Right.
But that's not quite the equipment necessarily.
Right. Well, you know what? My secret ambition is that I've actually wanted to write for the financial market, because, you know, I've subscribed to those newsletters forever. And I've been thinking, you know, somebody's written those, but, you know, I'm not there yet. I just need to do what I'm doing right now. And then, you know, who knows, down the road.
There you go.
Down the road. But thank you for your encouragement. I appreciate it.
You bet. And by the way, Susan sends some very nice comments. Thank you for your comments on her site and her stuff.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Thank you, Ed.
You're welcome, Gladys. Good to talk to you. All right. So a couple questions came in through the webcast that you guys typed in. All right. So Debs asked, do you recommend a live proofreader over Grammarly? I've been using Grammarly for a while. What more will you get with a proofreader? I actually do, and I have personal experience with this. In fact, my wife is getting her master's, and she does a ton of writing. And she's a great writer, but I'm still her editor and proofreader. So one thing I've noticed is that even though she runs everything through Grammarly before getting it to me to proofread, I always catch stuff, always, every single time. I think Grammarly is getting there, but it's just not 100%. I think it catches, and I'm just guessing, 90% of errors and problems. But there's still that 10%. And again, 10% is 10%. And a good proofreader is going to catch that stuff that just Grammarly is. It just won't. It doesn't have that level of artificial intelligence, at least yet. What more will you get with a proofreader? Well, it's really the getting closer to the 100% mark, if not the 100% mark. So I've been using proofreadnow.com. That's the company that my friend had recommended back in 2004, and they're fantastic. One of the things I love about them is that not just one, but they have two proofreaders look at your stuff. So with two proofreaders, you can get close, if not to 100%. And for what they're charging, and I believe it's $12 per page. And by the way, a page is considered 500 words, so that's way more than a full page and word. So $12 per page or so for a 24-hour turnaround, that is pretty remarkable. So to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. I would look at this as a cost of doing business when you're working with clients. And let's just say, you know, you got a 500-word or $500 article, and, you know, it might cost you $30, $40 to run it through your proofreader. To me, that's a no-brainer. And, in fact, I wouldn't look at it as, I don't know if I can afford it. The way I would look at it is, that's the wrong question. The right question would be, and I'm not saying Deb is even asking this. I'm just from working with a lot of writers. The right question would be, how can I charge more for my work so that – the proofreading is even more of a no-brainer. So that's the way I would start looking at that. Just a small price to pay for getting your stuff just right. So again, I'm just talking about client work. And I think the other place where I would look at it would be your website, just because that is your, you're not there to make excuses. A prospect's going to go look at your website, and if there are errors, they're going to catch them, and then that could create a little bit of doubt and concern. So those are two things that I would definitely consider using a proofreader for. Okay, so again, guys, star two, if you got a question. Oh, here you go. Deb, hey, you're on.
Hi.
How are you?
I came outside. My dog needed to go outside, and so I put my headphones on and decided to come out and chat for a little bit. Thanks for your input. You know, like I said, I've used Grammarly, the paid version or whatever, and they've done a pretty good job, but I found that as far as like the passive sentence thing goes, they pick, mm-hmm. there's a big difference between what they pick up and what the review on Microsoft Word picks up. So sometimes it's a little confusing, but as far as punctuation and typos and stuff, they've done a pretty good job. But I get what you mean about having another set of eyes, a real person, kind of like you said, the human value I think is important, and I'll look into that website that you mentioned when I get a client.
Yeah, there you go.
Another question: in sending out the warm emails to, you know, my network, there was a lot of folks that I didn't have their email addresses, had their phone numbers, and so I sent them. Would send them a text message with a link to the website asking them, you know, would you mind giving me your email address? But in the text, I also said what I was going to say in the email. I'm just starting this business, blah, blah, blah. And a couple of them were okay with sending me back their email address. And a lot of them just kind of ignored that fact. And I don't know that that makes a big difference if they're still getting the information. I mean, this is friends and ex-colleagues and whatever, not...
Yeah, these are people you know. And yeah. So what part did they ignore? The request for their...
Oh, sending back their email address.
Oh, okay, yeah. I wouldn't read too much into it. I know my natural reaction would be, oh, my gosh, you know, they don't want to give it out because they think I'm trying to sell them something.
Yeah, or they don't get any more emails.
One thing that I do, I think I probably do fairly well, and in fact it drives my wife crazy and some other people crazy, is I'm constantly paying attention to how I react to things everywhere, whether
yeah,
I'm going into
yeah.
a store or I get a message over email or I get a text. I'm not extremely detail-oriented, but with those kinds of things, I pay a lot of attention. And I think I've tried to turn it into a positive. One thing I've noticed about text is with texting, people don't give it the attention that they give to email. And I think it's partly the way the phones are designed, the interface. You know, you get a text, and if you get distracted or whatever, like, you'll lose that text, right? So I think in many cases it's just the format, it's the medium, and not so much the message. Like, I will not – a long text gives me a headache. It makes my eyes glaze over. I also tend to lose the message if there's a lot to – if there's an action I got to take or whatever. Because when – think about it. How do we react to text? Texts are very – they're interruption. And I could be in the middle of, let's say, one of my kids' soccer games, and I'll look at it real quick, but it's just not a good time.
Gotcha.
And then what happens is, because I don't treat it like an inbox, with email, I have an inbox that I keep coming back to. But with text, I don't go back, and I don't think a lot of people do, and sort through their text. Wait a minute, which ones have I not responded to? If I don't respond to it within an hour or so, there's a 80% chance that I'm going to forget. So I think I don't think I'm unusual. I think very many people are like that.
Yeah, I think it's the audience that you're reaching out to, too, because some people kind of like just live by text.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wasn't sure how to get around that not having their email addresses, so.
I mean, I think the only thing I would have probably done a little differently is I would have said, hey, been a while. I gotta send you an email. It'd be easier. I gotta send you a note. It'd be easier over email. What's your email address these days, or something like that?
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Rather than and let me tell you what it is, because there's a good probability that's going to get lost, and it has nothing to do with you. It's just the medium.
True. True. I don't know. Do you think maybe I should reach out again?
I would. I would, especially the ones that I'm a little bit closer to.
Yeah.
Hey, when you get a chance, Deb, send me your shoot me your email address. Text me back your email address.
Okay. I can do that.
Something like that. Yeah, it can't hurt. And, of course, if you don't get a response to that, then no need to go further. But yeah, I would. Okay. Deb, you still there? I think I lost Deb. Okay. Well, if you have any more questions about that, Deb, just hit me up with star 2 again. I looks like I lost you. Okay, so star 2, if you have a question, need some feedback on anything. Marissa just typed in, to add to the discussion about Grammarly, I work in a writing center, and we've done some research and testing with Grammarly. I agree that it is not a tool to rely on unless you have a very strong knowledge of grammar. When we did some product testing, Grammarly was not able to pick up on several errors, or it incorrectly flagged complex sentences. Oh, interesting. So that's good to know, because I'm sure your testing was much more comprehensive than what we're doing here. But I found the same thing. It's it didn't pick up a lot of passive voice, and I was really surprised. And it also didn't pick up some things that I thought were fairly obvious. But I guess, and I don't remember a specific instance, I see why it didn't. It didn't have that deeper layer of intelligence to understand, okay, this right here is not being used correctly. I don't know how many false negatives, because by the time my wife gives it to me, she's already run it through Grammarly and basically accepted every suggestion or change. So one thing I don't know is how many false negatives it's given me. So when I'm correcting things, I never know if that was her or that was Grammarly changing it. Interesting. Well, I'm waiting for questions. Wanted to kind of give you a heads up what's coming up. So next week, session 8, that is the final training session. And we're basically going to bookend the B2B business launcher roadmaps that I shared with you at the beginning and that we'll keep coming back to. That's your guide. There's some stuff that we still hadn't really talked about that includes follow-up, and it includes kind of if-then scenarios. So I'm going to go over that, and that way your roadmap will be completely finalized. So that's going to be the focus of session 8. We'll have that to you Monday morning. Next week, there's no coaching call. I'm out of town. It's spring break, so that's why. I'm going to be at the beach, and I need a break. It's a badly needed break. So I'll be off next week, but I'm back with you guys the following Tuesday. So that's Tuesday the 10th at 1 o'clock Eastern time. So same time, it's just Tuesday the 10th instead of a Thursday. So we'll send you reminders of all this. It's also in the training portal, The full schedule is there. And just a heads up, so if you haven't landed a client yet, and many of you guys haven't, a paying client, then you can continue to come to these calls. I'll continue to work with you and coach you. This is all based on the honor system, so all we ask is, hey, when you land a paying client, just let us know, and we will take you off the notifications. It's really for your own benefit also, so you don't get all these call emails, number one. Number two, I think you'll quickly find that if you've landed a paying client and you still attend the calls, they're not going to be as relevant to you, because we're going to be talking about things that are really more relevant for folks who haven't landed a first paying client yet. So just, again, it's an honor system. Just let us know. But you guys have access to those calls until you land that first paying client, or for up to a year from your registration date, whichever one comes first. And that schedule will change. You're going to start seeing more changes to it. It's going to average about every other week or so for the next few months. So be on the lookout for that, and we'll just send you all that information as we have it, and we'll send you the call reminder. So don't worry about that. All right, last call for questions. I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. Oh, Deb, so you got disconnected. Yeah, no big deal. Deb, did I answer your question, or are you good? Just let me know if there's anything else that that you want to talk about. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Rafiq, hey, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to clarify. Some clients have been asking to write a free sample as part of a triad process,
mm-hmm.
in addition to what I already have on my website. Is that something that you do, or does it depend on how, I scope out the client and see if they really are serious? What's your recommendation?
So that's something I would only do if you're trying to land that first or second client. So in other words, you see enough potential there, you don't care, you're just trying to get in, you need the motivation, you need that momentum, and everything else kind of checks out, I would be willing to consider it. It's kind of the pro bono route that we had been talking about as one of the options. But, you've got a paying client or two, and somebody says that, it's not something that I would accept. Instead, what I would counter with this offer. It's like, I understand where you're coming from, whatever your name is. Let's say the tables are turned. So you're the client. I understand where you're coming from, Rafiq. That's not the way I work. However, here's an idea. What if we worked on a small pilot project? Just something that would be, not a big dollar project, something that we could do where I can add some value. I'm willing to, to give you that for a discounted fee. And we can see how we work together and see if we really are a good fit, and you can get a really good feel for my writing and what it's like working with me. And I would propose that instead. And low risk. Every time I propose that, we've been able to come up with something simple that's not a ton of money, and that we can both feel good about. It's a screening device, and it's a good way for not just the client to test you out, but for you to test out the client. Because the fact that they're asking is a big enough red flag. I'm not saying they're going to be a bad client, but that you need to counter with something. I would not accept that offer without countering. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have another client who wanted me to send them a detailed step-by-step outline of how, in this case, a case study writing project would work. So I guess
outline. What do they mean?
Right. So that's what I tried to clarify, and I guess they haven't worked with an outside vendor before, and they wanted to know, so what information would you need from us? How many drafts will you write? What format will this be in? How will you want to be paid? And so that's something I've been working on right now. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts on, I want it to be detailed so they know that I've thought this through, but I don't want it to be so detailed that it overwhelms them.
Yeah, I agree. And not only that, but they're nervous. They're nervous. The way I deal with this is I give them enough to ease their main concerns, and then I ask if we can move forward. So rather than trying to map out your whole process in detail, I would jot down the questions. So you already know some of the questions they ask you when you ask for more detail, right? So they responded with some sample questions. Those are the ones you just shared with me?
Yes.
Yeah. Add a couple more of your own. I want you to put yourself in their shoes. I think you can come up with two or three. And then just give them kind of a one-page FAQ, you know, with those questions, with some answers. And the answers don't need to be long answers, you know, just a few sentences each. And then that's it. And don't try to answer every possible contingency. Don't try to address every possible scenario. Just stick to the basics, get it to them, and see what they think. And then ask them, does this address your concerns? Because sometimes, and I've made this mistake in the past, is I try to give them every possible scenario, contingency, et cetera, and then all that does is create more questions and concerns.
Okay.
So give them just enough. Because with any project, there's a lot of if-then. I mean, you just don't. But if you stick to the basics, first we have a kickoff call, and we discuss your customer. And then
right.
You share your ideas as to what you think the real story is there. Then you go ahead and schedule an interview with the customer and me, and we coordinate that. Then we do the interview. And notice that in each of these steps I've mentioned, there's all kinds of little micro steps that could happen, but there's no point in detailing those.
Got it. Okay.
In terms of revisions, it's up to two requested revisions. I understand that, you know, you want to run it through the client as well, so I'm willing to do another set of two requested revisions at that point. But usually what I find with case studies, there's not going to be that many from the customer, from the client side. They might be more from the actual customer you're interviewing.
Right.
And then
right.
You make changes, submit for final approval by you and the customer, and then we have sign off, you know, so that kind of thing. So just give them the basic steps, not all the micro sub steps.
Okay. Yeah, I think I have a good idea. And you know, I can always give that just enough amount of information and then invite them to say, hey, this is the way it works. And then, you know, let's have a follow-up chat to talk this through and answer any questions you might have.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You know, I've heard it put this way, Rafiq, is sometimes the service providers, we want to answer every possible question and concern and all that. And I found that is actually counterproductive. Like I said, it ends up creating more questions and concerns than anything else. And somebody I work with said, I think something to the effect of separate the decision from the logistics, meaning, you know, if they have a question, go ahead and answer that question. But then don't go ahead, oh, and by the way, here's this other concern or here's this other thing that some of the people bring up. Let me answer those as well. So don't over-deliver information. And also only bring those things up if and when they ask. But, again, only what they're asking. So just I've been guilty, I know, of trying to answer too many things and then offering way more than what they're asking for. So just – answer the basic stuff and then ask for some kind of commitment. All right, so what do you think? Did I address your concerns? And then let's move forward, if so. All right, guys. Any questions? Last call. I don't see any other raised hands. We'll go ahead and wrap up. We'll have, as usual, the replay posted tomorrow. And let's continue the conversation in the forum. So I'm here for you guys. Any questions, post them in the Q&A thread, and I'll be happy to support you. I'll be out again next week. I will be checking the forum a couple of times, so I won't be completely offline. But if you need help, I will. I'll check in and answer questions in the forum. Just give me a little bit of extra time that you normally would, just because I won't be on my computer all the time. All right, guys, you have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk again real soon. Take care.